Welcome to How To Thought Leadership with your host, Julie Morris. Now sit back and relax. Let's grow your influence so you can serve at scale.
You're not going to be ready for what's next, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't dive in. My guest today is Hayal Coach. She is fantastic, has made 4 career pivots, not just a role shift, but like an actual pivot into an entirely new career. And she's come away with confidence and strength and shared with us today some incredibly tactical, practical things that you can do. You're in transition, even now. If you're not getting ready for what's next, it's time you start. This is your new part-time job. Thought leadership, getting ready to either launch something on the side, getting ready by thinking about what next career move you want to make. Prevention of an unexpected transition looks like just being in transition and being ready for that all the time. I'm glad you're here. Let's dive right in. Women like us, like my fabulous guest, Hayal and I, so we are busy. We are building things. We are working on careers. We are juggling family. Life can get in the way, but I am so excited to get to sit down with you today. So if you would, tell us a little bit about you, and then I have a question for you. Who did you admire? Who fires you up?
Thank you. I'm currently a regional vice president here at Salesforce, the world's leading CRM platform. I lead a team of sales professionals, and we partner with high-tech, high-growth accounts and companies all across San Francisco and Silicon Valley. It's a lot of the companies you hear in the news that are pre-IPO, post-IPO, or venture capital owned. So it's a really exciting space. Before this, I led a team at my own startup, an HR tech startup that was based in Istanbul, Turkey, which is where I'm originally from. I currently serve as a board member and advisor there. I really began my career in investment banking and consulting. I've definitely had a few careers in my time. I also am an angel investor, and I'm really active in the Turkish American community here. Then on a personal front, love to travel, been at least 50 countries so far. And I love art, photography, and sports.
Okay. And then now to my fun question to kick us off. Who fires you up? Because we all need these people that believe in us, love us, or tell us about your person.
Yeah, absolutely. My mother. I'm really blessed and lucky to have a fearless and passionate mom who has been honestly a leader both personally in our lives and then also professionally. She's retired years ago, but she's still super active, serving as an angel investor, board member to many companies, and a real activist in the community. And she is really a pure inspiration for me. And I still look up to her to this day. I feel like it's about balancing this fearless ambition and drive to really get things done, right? With softness and kindness and empathy. That's a really important balance as women to not forget that side, not forget, but push down or quiet that side of our natural capabilities. I'm sure you guys all heard in February, there was a massive set of earthquakes that happened in Turkey and northern Syria. And we immediately kicked into high gear about how we could support, right? She is a co-founder of a nonprofit based in the Bay Area. And the level and the impact that organization has had to date has been incredible. The difficulty really in gathering all the resources financially and human manpower, physical supplies. We sent container over container of supplies and still to this day are really closely partnering with volunteers on the ground for not just physical supplies, but also mental health resources. Seeing her really spearhead that effort was incredible. The reason though, why it's really powerful is because it comes from her heart and her empathy and her true kindness of wanting to help. And I think that's just a really good example. And that's just, you know, a quick one that came to mind.
What's the name of the organization?
So it's called Empowering the Turkish American Community.
Wow. Amazing. When I started to look at your profile, your bio in advance of our conversation, it definitely stood out to me. And I love that we're going to get to talk about the practicalities of career pivots here today. I've read that in some data point this summer. I think it's 6 careers that we're all going to have before we're done working. We work for longer and we have to adapt to this ever-changing market. Oh my goodness, changing at light speed. I know my own industry. In the course of 4 months, thought leadership, helping you copyright. Oh my goodness. So it's ever at shift. And so how has it been with you in career? Talk us through what it's like to be you. Yeah.
So the 6th number is interesting. I'm at 4 to date. In my almost 20 years career, I have had 4 very different careers. Hope to have 6. We shall see. Started out in investment banking. I worked across equity research and then also in M&A. From there, I went to business school, but then also right after business school, pivoted to consulting. I was in consulting for several years, for 6 years, and really did the gamut. So I did strategic consulting, operational consulting, M&A consulting. I tend to have a personality that loves change. That's an important, it's an important characteristic, I think, yes, as you grow your leadership skills. I really believe I thrive in ambiguity and in environments where there is a lot of things at play and emotion, and you need to figure out a way to stay comfortable in that zone. So did consulting for 6 years in 2 different countries. So originally in the US, then I moved back to Turkey, then made a pivot to entrepreneurship and co-founded my startup with 3 other co-founders. And it was an amazing experience. That was also the first time I took on a pure sales and business development capacity. So I was leading our sales and BD at the time, initially marketing as well, and loved it. That's when I fell in love with sales. I really loved it. To date, though, at that point, I'd only been in a more services capacity in consulting, investment banking. And then our startup was HR tech. We really connected companies of all shapes and sizes with on-demand business experts. So a bit of a matchmaking, a talent platform. And again, still human services, right? Mm-hmm. The transition to Salesforce, where I've been now for a little over 4 years, has been to product, right? So tech product sales, both in an account management perspective and then also now in a leadership role. And that is a whole other beast. So that was a transition as well. And that's where I am today. And I really love it. I don't think it's the end. I do foresee that I'll have at least 1 or 2 other career pivots, we'll say. If you look at it from the onset, right? Investment banking, consulting, entrepreneurship, tech sales, what is the weave? But what is the common thread, I'll say? And I think it's something that you really have to create, right? What is the story that you're going to tell that's obviously unique to you, right? About how you can weave those 4 experiences together. And I think even before you do that, you need to give yourself permission to change and not to label ourselves. I see it all the time where people say, okay, this person is really good at X. That doesn't mean they can't be good at Y later on down the road, right? Yes. Or that they just simply want to try out something else. I think for me, again, I didn't see it coming as I went through the transitions, but I did allow myself to say, okay, why not? Why can't I try this? If I was good at investment banking, I feel like there's a lot of parallels to consulting. I think there's a lot of parallels from consulting to entrepreneurship. And there's a ton of parallels between entrepreneurship and pure sales, right? So I think being able to weave that story, giving yourself kind of permission to be not just one in one box. And the other element is focusing on what you're good at. I think we're always told to improve upon our weaknesses. And I think that's important. You definitely should be aware of them and self-aware overall. But I think really focusing on what you're good at and figuring out careers where that is maybe not the utmost of important thing, but top 3 criteria, yes, right? I think that's something else I did. If I think about it now, not a regret, because I never feel like I have regrets, but I could have even gone to sales earlier in my career, but I think that was the noise behind in the back of my head saying, they're telling me I'm good at sales. Do I need to prove them wrong by doing something else? Listen to your inner voice, and especially women have incredible, that inner gut and voice. And I think it's really powerful.
I absolutely agree. Something you said to me when we were first getting to know each other was so powerful. It really stuck with me, is that you're never really ready. You're never really ready. And I've thought about that line. And as I hear you share about these career pivots, like, I'm sure to some degree, it's exhausting to be making a reinvention of yourself. That takes a lot. And then it takes a lot of confidence as well. And that's not even to mention if you're under duress at the moment, if you're making a transition because you're forced. So it's nice to gather around this idea that it's a lot to ask, but no one is ever ready. And you just need to go for it anyway, really confidently. How did you make it through pivot to pivot? What was it like, and what can we tell listeners who are probably struggling to some degree with confidence about explaining to the world around them, hey, I'm pivoting. Get excited.
Yeah. I'd say truly, we talk a lot about imposter syndrome. I still have moments where I'm thinking, oh, am I really cut out for this role? Or as a leader, you have, let's just say, a week of really good days. And then you have a really bad day where you're thinking, okay, I don't think I performed to the best of my level. I don't think I portrayed myself the way I would want it today. So you will always have, that's another thing. So you're never ready and you're never 100% great at your job. And to be honest, if you think you are, then you're underperforming in the sense that you're under your capabilities, right? You can do more and make more of an impact in a different role. I just remind myself that too, all the time. Just yesterday, I would say I had a day where I thought, okay, did I perform at a level where I'm super proud across the board? Maybe not today, right? But I have many other days and a track record where I could say overall I have. And that's the goal, right? I say that I like to stay in my lane because comparing ourselves to one another gets us nowhere. There was always someone better than me, always someone quote unquote worse than me, right? But it's more about how can you be internally competitive? I'm in an industry that's highly competitive here in the Bay Area, but I try to think of it as not necessarily external competition, but how can I challenge myself to be my best and to get better over time? Right. Mm-hmm. And when you're thinking about it, literally just basing your performance on your previous performance or on your ideal performance, then, you're just focused on yourself. And when you're focused on yourself, you can get further. And it's not that you're just thinking of yourself, but when you're not focused on, okay, that person took this role, should I just take it? Those pivots honestly never end up well. It's got to make sense for you and where you want to take your career, really owning your uniqueness. So many times in all of these different industries, sadly, but truthfully, I have been, if not the only woman, among very few women and very few women of my nationality, very few women with my background. I like to own that. Yes, I feel different. That doesn't mean I need to mold myself to be like the other people. It means that I need to like own it and think, what do I bring that's unique, right, to this equation? And how can I really emphasize that and truly add value from that angle, right? So I think owning your uniqueness too makes these transitions easier. People think sometimes, okay, sales is just that used car salesman. Honestly, you need to be good at selling yourself to do anything in life. And if you believe it, if you believe I should be here, I really do think I can add value. Am I the best in this room? No, but that's the goal. You don't want to be the best in the room, right? You want to be surrounded by people who are better than you in that room. But I think I have that unique value. Then you can sell it, and which means you can convince others. And if you come in with that kind of attitude, people listen and take note.
What do you think it could look like to own your uniqueness and not be afraid to put yourself out there?
I think volunteering for internal, I'll say, events or internal activities that's out of your current scope of work. And because that's the moment you're like, okay, why are you doing this? Oh, because I'm interested in the future for this type of thing. And I think my previous, experience doing this could be of interest in this role. So volunteering for things that are quote unquote out of your scope. When you get in a room, making sure that you're sitting in the table and not in the side and the back taking notes, which, by the way, I did this throughout my 20s. That was a long time. You should be at the table making decisions. in even any one-on-one conversation you're having, okay, sharing unique examples from your own life, but it's not always easy at first, but it's, I do think it's on you to create those parallels and that story that then you can weave in throughout.
If we were to imagine that transparency, authenticity, you said owning your uniqueness, a lot of the people listening have put themselves in a box for a long time. Maybe corporate, it's, this is the only thing that's acceptable here. Is it looks like this? It looks like this. If we are going to go out and reinvent ourselves, to me, it seems like a really awesome time to think about what have you left behind that is part of you, that does, is you, the best of you, and how do you bring that back? But any thoughts and guidance around that area?
I think any situation where you're making that pivot, you're not sure, I think it's also healthy just to acknowledge that. I'm born and raised in the Bay Area, but spent many years, almost 13 years away, and then moved back here. Let's call it, it was for me, it was like, this is the elephant in the room. I don't know SF today. I don't know the tech landscape here right now. Just acknowledging it, validating it, and then just like letting it go. Once you share that feeling, the other person, I think it one shows a little bit of vulnerability, which is nice. It also shows self-awareness, right? And it also shows that you're able to, you know, what we love, everyone loves, right, in a corporate environment is, are you able to articulate the situation, but then are you able to get past it? And I think a lot of people stay in that stuck place, but once you acknowledge it, you share it, then we're moving past it. And then we're celebrating things that make you unique, celebrating previous successes that will make you successful in this role, and being open with your peers, learning from your peers. I lead a team today, but I'm constantly learning from my team as well. I'm learning from people even who are not on my team, a lower level, I'll say, a higher level. It really doesn't matter. I think something that stops a lot of people is being really caught up in the title. At age 40, how can I, you know, I need to be at an RVP, SVP, whatever it may be. First of all, you don't need to be anything, truly. Nobody, a lot of people don't even know what that means. And at different companies, that means something else, right? The more you're happy with the path you've taken and what you're learning or what you're really adding to the company or to your career, the more you can explain it with a way that's authentic and, quite frankly, believable, right? Learning from your peers along the way, whatever level they're at, sharing failures, getting feedback, accepting where you're at and just feeling good about it, because there's moments where you don't take that promotion or moments where you maybe take a equivalent role that where you're at right now, or you go down a step for change of industry or a certain geography you wanted, whatever it may be. There's always a reason, right, behind it. As long as you own that reason, the career is a long look. I've almost been working nearly 20 years, hopefully another 20 years to come. There's lots of ups and downs, and it's about how you frame that and also how you recover, right? Any athlete can tell you that. And I really think approaching it that way, how do you brush it off and learn from it and then, you know, get back in the ring?
That get back in the ring, I think, is going to be crucial for all of us, that you don't have to have been born with this thing that says, no, if things just didn't maybe go right this way, here we go. I'm going to start the new day with not a worry or care about that thing that happened. I've acknowledged it, like to your point, and to be able to feel it and then let it go. That's, I don't know if we're all born with that. That's pretty awesome and pretty special.
We're definitely not. And I think it takes practice. I don't have it down pat 24/7. I definitely have days where I probably, you know, wallow or get too caught up in it a bit. But I give myself, so my rule to myself is 24 hours. So you are allowed, depending on the situation, we'll say, it could be 2 hours, but it could also be up to 24 hours where you're just in that, whatever you're living, right? But then you got to say, next day is a new day. And, you know, people treat you how you treat yourself. You're treating yourself like you're a loser, you're an idiot, you're a disaster. It shows. But if you come in there saying, okay, I'm not perfect, I made a mistake, but I'm get back out there, I have good intentions, I'm going to make it right, for example, or I'm going to work harder today, whatever it may be, people treat you that. They're like, okay, yeah, she made a mistake, but she's back there.
People treat you how you treat you.
Yes.
That's huge. Okay, one of the things that we talked about a little while back, this idea that while I am in corporate, while I'm in a role, one of the things that I can do to help make sure that I secure my role, help make my manager look good.
Yes.
And I, when you said that, I thought, gosh, like, I don't know how accepted that idea is or how willing we are to do that. Does that hold true?
Yes. No, obviously it's unfortunate, right? To have a boss that's a jerk and is out for themselves and is not collaborative, really tough, right? However, I think in terms of if you, in those scenarios, what I try to do is, because we have the same thing, it could be with external customers, it could be with your boss, you're going to have a persona that's challenging, right? That is not respecting you, making you feel a certain way. I try honestly to visualize that I'm talking or dealing with someone that I like and try to bring that attitude to the conversation. I truly do this and I think it works if you can do it. So that's one thing I do. And the two is, if you're thinking about it objectively, so are you behaving, are you trying to make this jerk of a person look good? No. But are you trying to make your manager or your leader look good? Yes. And if you can do the behaviors, right, that you would do if you liked your manager. Mm-hmm. And by the way, in those scenarios, you should be documenting it so you do know, you know, what you're doing specifically. You have examples, right? That can't be debated. And so you can say, these are the things I did. But when you start getting too much in your head and your emotions, we've all been there sometimes, it just doesn't work for either yourself nor your leader or your manager. And then you're stuck in this vicious cycle. So I think, like, one, the visualizing and saying, okay, if I take my emotions out of this scenario, what would I do? How would I behave? These are some of the things I do. Maybe there's 10 things you do. So start with 7 of those. Maybe the last 2-3 are a little bit too hard given the scenario, but try to get at least half of those done, document them, and then at least you leave there feeling good about yourself. Because the last thing you want to leave any meeting or one-on-one or whatever it may be is feeling like, oh, not only do I hate that person, I also didn't perform at my top level. I got caught up in my emotions and now I don't even look good. And that's like the worst case scenario, right? So I always like to visualize, where do I want, like, what do I want to get out of this meeting and how do I want to come across? And not like just to that person, but to any objective person you could then parlay that interaction to, right?
Michael Phelps, the Olympian, the swimmer, I think he was the one who coined this phrase of just stay in the pool. Don't get out before you've finished your laps. And knowing that at least if you've held your head up high, if you've held yourself and your attitude and your conduct to such a degree that you don't feel bad about what you've been, then we can make that transition to the next thing with more confidence and more strength than if we had not been who we knew we could be. So,
Julie, absolutely. And this is something we're talking about here at Salesforce right now, because especially in my segment, high tech, high growth companies, generally, I would say when the economy is good, it's a fantastic, really exciting space to be in. When the economy is not great, which has been the past, I would say, almost year, and we expect it to be another 6 months at least, it's a tough place to be.
Yeah.
And the natural inclination is, if this industry is not performing well, let me go to the next industry and let me, like you said, stay in the game and stay in the water. It speaks a lot more highly if you can share that story of how you behaved in a really stressful, tough environment, and then how were you able to bounce back? So for me, this is like the third time in my career where I'm facing a really tough economic or political socioeconomic environment.
Yep.
It happened during the crisis 2007, 2008, when I was in investment banking in New York, and I had a lot of friends who got laid off. I had a year where they told us, you should just be happy you have a job, no raises, nothing. And just a really negative, tough environment for about almost 2 years. I lived it again when I was living in Turkey, running a startup myself. And Turkey was going through a very tumultuous political, economic, socio environment. Very challenging, a multiple moments, right? To really stay in the game and to convince not only our customers, but our team to stay in the game, right? So living through that. And then now today, And I really feel, especially in the Bay Area, many of us know, it feels like that. Feels pretty tough. Layoffs across the board. We have a lot of companies in tough scenarios and just a real static environment, right? Where a lot of people are very scared to make any sort of investment, good or bad. So I think though, getting through this type of thing, it makes you feel amazing and you learn so much about persevering through that and whatever that means for you personally or professionally. So I think staying in it for at the bare minimum, doing it day by day. So saying, okay, if I can stay in this 3 more months, all right, maybe 6 more months. And then you, next thing you know, you're out of it.
Amazing. If you're in career transition and you are at that senior level, you might be thinking to yourself now, well, maybe it's time to start something on the side, like some consulting or some project-based work. But like a lot of people don't necessarily have that business development or that sales background. And so they might be terrified of having to go and try to sell themselves and try to be in sales at all right now. So if people are maybe a little newer to sales and don't have quite the background you do, but and they're looking at this economy going, who wants to buy anything?
I'd say one, starting obviously baby steps, right? There's this thought of, okay, it's not even worth doing if it's not going to be wildly successful. Like, oh, it's always worth doing, right? It doesn't matter where you start for, there's no specific goal in mind either. I must target this much, these many clients or this much revenue. Really taking a minute to self-assess, right? What are my skill sets? What can I help with? What are some examples of where I've done that? And putting together, not a resume, but a portfolio, right? Of examples that you can share. And then using all these different mediums we have today. So not just sending out emails and cover letters. That honestly feels very outdated at this point. But it's more about, okay, let's use these channels. So could be Instagram, LinkedIn, podcasts, and YouTube, and lots of different mediums to attract different type of customers. Really, just yesterday, I was talking to a friend who has done amazing things over YouTube, right? One, really self-assessing where you can help and coming with concrete examples. You have to do like the homework for them, right? Visualize it for them. Come to them with really relevant examples. You have identify who are your target, what's your target segment. In that segment, what are some of the types of projects you could have helped with? What are the type of customers that you could have gotten from A to Z, right? Mm-hmm. Quantify that as much as possible. That's the stuff that makes like in their minds that visualization come to life. And then I think present it in ways that are unique and catch them a bit off guard. I think now we're getting to the place where there's a lot more in-person events. There's so much to be said for in-person contact and approaching them at a human level. And then lastly, because we do this in product sales, at the end of the day, absolutely, budgets are very tight. Everyone's trying to make basically more from less.
Yes.
So that is where you come in. How can I make your smaller team mm-hmm. effective by leveraging me, someone who's potentially providing services on demand, ad hoc, flexible nature, really use that to your advantage too, right? So because you have that flexibility to say, okay, I have this specific project, specific scope I'm coming in for, and then you don't have to worry about me. It's not this ongoing cost, for example. Or it could be a model where a retainer makes sense because they're coming at you with lots of things here and there. But showing that like flexible model that you're willing to work with them with milestone, project milestones and specific scopes. I think if you're thinking through all of that and saying, okay, I can package this up for you in a way that can make sense. And then I'm staying persistent. Mm. Let's be honest. In sales, okay. I wish it was like every conversation or two. I think there's a saying that says it's 7 interactions usually that take to make a sale.
Oh yeah.
And most people, Julie, give up around three or four. A few emails, a few in-person interactions, a few interactions over social mediums.
People will ask all the time, I don't understand how you go on LinkedIn and you tell me about, you know, your kid or your cat or your dog or your tomatoes or whatever it is. And somehow you're telling me that's going to translate to them becoming a client. And what is so funny is that's what you just described. It's not a boring email. It's not a pitch. Our brains that sees something online. And we still think it's like, ooh, she's on TV. It is just wild. People who I haven't met before will meet for a Zoom and they'll say, I've been following you for years. and they're kind of giddy. And I'm like, do you know, I am just the most human of humans out there. Why are you excited right now? But it's just from being seen. And so what thought leadership can do is do exactly what our sales guru just described. And that is to get in front of them and to do so in a unique and creative way. You have to stand out. It is more risky to sit back.
Yes, absolutely. And I think you're an amazing example of this on LinkedIn. And I think approaching it from like a human perspective and element, right? Being consistent, but not consistent in the messaging, but consistent in the amount of outreach, we'll say, right? Yeah. So they feel like, oh yeah, I can expect, right, that Julie is going to come with some thought leadership. Instead of being like, oh yeah, Julie did that once a year ago and did it again, like maybe 8 months ago. I think the consistency, their creativity, and the genuine component of it, I think, is really important.
It will take a certain number of interactions for people to go, oh, that's what she does. Oh, yeah. And actually connect. That is your service. And that is what you can do for them. And you have to say it over and over. It's like Lay's potato chips. They keep buying Super Bowl ads. It's like, we, of course we know that they're in the market for this, but just not being afraid to just talk about what you love and to do so in a way that serves, that to do so in a way that really does care about the interaction that you have at hand and the chance to make a difference. And I love that so much. And I think that we can get concerned about making it look like we're showing off or we're putting ourselves in the spotlight just for fun. And it's, if you do so with a heart of service, if you do so to try to genuinely make an impact, then that's, it will transform how you perceive the situation of going after what you want.
Absolutely. I couldn't say it better. Totally agreed.
Awesome. Thank you for taking the time to make a difference in our lives as we think about what a career pivot could look like and the confidence we need to have in ourselves and the thing that we're about to do.
Thank you for listening to How To Thought Leadership with Julie Morris. You can find Julie on LinkedIn and most other social media platforms. If you'd like to talk about how to increase your own influence through thought leadership, you can contact Julie through personateam.com.